The assassination of Charlie Kirk was an obvious tragedy which raises legitimate questions about political violence, threat awareness, prevention. The aftermath of the assassination has instead been responded to in ways that are limiting freedoms and pitting people against each other. I feel the need to repeat this. Charlie Kirk's assassination was a tragedy, first and foremost for the Kirk family, but for the nation as well. And anyone who's celebrating it is truly a troubled person. So that being said, is political violence truly overtaking our country? Has the present seen more political violence in the past? With us now to examine all this, which he has also done in an article published over at the website for the Cato Institute, is the Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies with the aforementioned Cato Institute, Alex Norosta. How are you today, Alex?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good to have you here to talk about this in with reality and not personal purpose, I guess I'll call it, for lack of a better phrase at the moment. Cato.org, you're right. You can read Alex's article that we're going to work with here, as well as explore the other points of focus of the Cato Institute. Your article, Politically Motivated Violence is Rare in the United States. Let's get some definitions down first. As far as political violence, is that also defined as domestic terrorism by any organization, such as the FBI, for example?
Yes, the overlap is 100%. So what terrorism is politically motivated violence, or violence to further an economic, social, religious agenda, right? So something like Al-Qaeda is a domestic terror group, and they are committing their terrorism to try to affect policy, to try to change the world. So they're not normal criminals in that way.
I wanted to put that before you, the listener, because as we go along here, there is an important difference you have to make when you look at the stats, which are slim, surprisingly. How many people do you think your research and the statistics you've arrived at are going to surprise people? Because when you look at the imagery, the verbal imagery that is being painted, we're seeing, as I said, in the aftermath, one single horrible act being used to do everything ranging from, we had the vice president say to people, if someone you work with, someone you go to school with is saying the quote-unquote wrong thing, report them to your superiors, to Starbucks being all but ordered to change the name of Charlie Kirk's favorite drink on their menu to include his name, otherwise there'll be trouble. I mean, the reaction for one tragic incident does make one believe that, okay, we've seen a lot of this. We have to do something about this now. What do the statistics say about the level of politically motivated violence that we've seen in America?
The statistics paint the exact opposite picture. Politically motivated terrorist attacks and violence are extremely rare in the United States. Since 2020, there have been a total of 79 people murdered and attacks on the U.S. soil in politically motivated violence. This includes people murdered by, Islamists, left-wingers, right-wingers, other weird ideologies, foreign nationalists. So it's a really small group of people, 79 people over 5 years. It's something like 0.07% of all the homicides during that time. So just to repeat that, accounts for 0.07% of all the homicides. And every one of those homicides is a tragedy, of course. Murder is always a tragedy when it happens. It's always terrible. But if we're going to have this massive reordering of society, we're going to have the government clamping down on free speech, we're going to have this new wave of cancellations, it had at least better be in reaction to something that is a massive nationwide threat that is escalating. And 79 murders over since 2020 is not that.
Do you think part of the imagery or the false impression of politically motivated terrorist attacks in the U.S. are because we've seen a greater – the frequency has increased more in the present than the past? If someone doesn't go to the internet to look it up, they'll think, okay, remember Ford, someone tried to shoot President Ford in the 70s, and I don't remember anything happening until Reagan got shot in 81. So there's a gap in those two in that time realm versus today, where it's not every month, but a lot more frequent than it was back then. You think that's part of the reason why the picture is being painted such as it is?
Well, I think part of it is we just remember stuff that happened more recently better than things that happened a long time ago. And today, in this social media age where we all have cameras and videos in our pocket because of phones and cell phones, everything is recorded. So you can see, like, that horrible image. I mean, I watched the video, unfortunately, of when Kirk was shot, and it is a gory, brutal, bloody video. I'm always going to remember that, right? Even if I never see it again, I'm always going to remember it. It's always going to make an impression on me. Whereas if this had happened like 20, 30 years ago, the odds are there would not have been a video of it at all, right? So, and I think when things are recorded this way, it really makes a bigger impact on the psyches of Americans who see this.
Now, your research, as you state in the article, came up with the number 3,599 people have been murdered in politically motivated terrorist attacks in the U.S. from January 1st, 1975 through September 10th of 2025. How much does that number change if you remove the 9/11 attacks out of the equation?
So it does change it quite a bit. The 9/11 attacks are the deadliest terrorist attacks in world history, and of course in the U.S. as well. So if you take them out, that number drops by 83%, down to 620, which is just an enormous decrease. So, like, when you look at this data, when you think about terrorism, politically motivated violence in the U.S., it is dominated by 9/11. And I think the reason why you take out 9/11 is so that you can really focus on the remaining attackers. Because if you leave 9/11 in there, I mean, the data set is just basically 9/11. And that doesn't tell you anything about any other terrorism or politically motivated crimes that are out there.
Let's get into that part, because as we're hearing right now from the Trump administration, most recently, the FBI is now going to label all transgender people. This is all based on the fact that the shooter, Charlie Kirk, was living with, dating, whatever that relationship was with a transgender person. So the FBI is now going to label transgender people violent extremists. And the mantra is all political violence comes from the left. If you look at the numbers overall, but then if you look, break down the percentages by excluding September 11th, what are we told?
So what we see excluding September 11th is that that the number of people murdered in these attacks by right-wingers is accounts for 63% of the total. Left-wingers account for 10%, and other Islamist terrorists account for 23%. So just based on that period of time, the evidence is that right-wing terrorists kill about six times as many people as left-wing terrorists.
Dr. Alex Nerasta, who is the Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies with the Cato Institute, cato.org, their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Let me repeat those stats again, the house just here. Murders and politically motivated terrorism, excluding September 11th, perpetrated by the right, 63%, perpetrated by Islamist, 23%, perpetrated by the left, 10%. In this day and time, Alex, are those numbers actually going to be heard, or even more so, because I see this all the time on my social media feeds as well as others. You post these factual statistics, and what's the response by those who it calls out? Fake news.
Oftentimes, the response is that they don't believe it. They think it's a conspiracy. They think that I have lied. I share with them the evidence and data, because you can download my evidence from the website. You can download the names, and you can check them out for yourself to see if I made a mistake, if you want, or see if I misclassified something. So a lot of them just do not believe it. And then there's another group of people who just say, wow, I thought this was a bigger problem, but I'm a little relieved. Because I think a lot of people out there, you know, the news cycle really depends on bad things happening. People pay attention to bad things. But there is a larger segment of people out there than I thought who just want to know what's going on and are relieved to know that it's when they find out that there are fewer bad things than they thought. And then there's another group of people. This is the third group. They just want to think the world is burning no matter what. And they are really upset to know that the world is a little bit better off than they thought.
Well, there's no doubt that we have issues, emotional, political, yeah, every point in between here in America. But unless people understand and respect the facts of the statistics, we're not going to find any answers anytime soon, are we, Alex?
We're definitely not. And I think our duty as adults, our duty as Americans, our duty as rational people is to try to see the world as accurately as possible. That means acknowledging problems, which absolutely do exist. It also means acknowledging when things are going pretty well, which is how most things are going. This country is a wonderful place to live. In my estimation, it's the best place to live in all of human history right now. We are lucky to be Americans. We're lucky to be alive. That's why so much of the world wants to come here. And we need to be, I think, a little less negative about all of that. We need to be a little bit more positive because that is what comports with reality, not this really negative doomsday image.
I'm going to post a link over at our homepage to Alex's column over at the Cato website. Politically motivated violence is rare in the United States, because within the article are links to the material that he used for the research. So when you're reading the article, if you're starting to have doubts about what you're reading, you could find Alex brings his backup, like any good person with the truth should do. And that's something I do, again, on my social media pages. Maybe you've seen that, too. Someone makes a charge, an empty charge. I say, prove it. So they can either prove it or, more often than not, too many of them say, look it up yourself. I'm not doing your homework for you. Well, that kind of diminishes what you're trying to prove with what you're purporting. But what Alex does, he brings the backup that will hopefully educate you into the reality of what is obviously a dangerous situation. But thankfully, the frequency isn't as much as the imagery leads one to believe. You can find out more about Alex's work, the work of the Cato Institute, at their website, cato.org. He is the Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies with the Cato Institute. Alex Narasta, thanks so much for helping us gain a better understanding of the reality of what is a momentarily, I'll say, hopefully dark situation with remedies that are possible. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.